A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, my name is Grigor Dimitrov.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
We're not in a car today, Catherine. We're standing next to the practice courts, which are utterly deserted. We've had the afternoon session, the first of the quarterfinals, women's and men's. We're before the night session here on Tuesday, and it is a bit strange seeing the practice courts deserted, isn't it?
Well, Serena Williams was there until moments ago, Serena plus entourage, which includes a man who, as far as I can tell, I don't doubt that he has other roles that I don't witness on a day-to-day basis. I'm seeing a mere fragment of the factory production line, but of the fragment that I see, all he does is apply her sunscreen for her.
I want a person who does that for me.
And there is another person that just carries the dog in a handbag, and that's a great job she's got there.
That's the job you're applying for, isn't it?
Yeah, I just got the dog into the prime coverage, and I'm positively beaming
about it. You should see the look on her face.
Do you know what the dog is called?
Go on.
Christopher Chip Rafael Nadal Williams.
They've actually given Rafael Nadal as his middle name.
It's got the name of a Tory MP. Or as many names as a Tory MP.
That's fantastic.
You should put Esquire after.
I was going to say, you're telling me Rafael Nadal's a Tory MP? Okay. The other thing I should say is I've actually had to take the long way around to get to your studios here. We have to walk around the practice courts. And the reason I had to do that is because there is the biggest queue imaginable outside the practice courts, which I suspect means that Roger Federer isn't too far away. I don't think he practices here, does he? He's probably going on the Arthur Stadium.
He does pre-match.
Does he?
I think what they do is they schedule them on here, and then if there's a sufficiently long gap on Arthur Ashe for them to practice on there, then they do that. But he's been practicing here a lot.
Oh, really? I mean, I would think that there will be there's a fairly long gap. It's about 5:30 as we come to you now. Matches in the evening session start at 7 o'clock. The matches, well, I mean, one of them was four sets. Stan Wawrinka against Daniil Medvedev. Medvedev's won. Medvedev's in the semis.
We're not going to include that in the podcast, though, because this is the tennis podcast, and I don't know if what I just saw was tennis or otherworldly sport that Daniil Medvedev is playing and trolling us all with. I don't know.
He's the first person I've ever seen who's effectively trolled Stan Wawrinka and got away with it without getting
bullied him.
I mean, you know, I tend to think that if you do, if most people, I think if they tried to do to Stan Wawrinka what Medvedev just did, might get laid out. You know, because I could imagine Stan just losing his rag and knocking him out. But
it was like Stan had been. Well, I mean, what was that? His head was scrambled. It was such an awful tactical performance from Stan Wawrinka. I think this is what Medvedev does to people. He just makes you feel completely discombobulated.
That's what he did. I was commentating on the first two sets of it, and it's, I mean, to start with, Medvedev came onto the court. He said afterwards, he said, I felt fine coming onto the court, and then I started to get pain in my thigh, and he was getting...
He said he felt perfect coming on the court.
he got one of those massages that I'm convinced is doing an injury more than the original injury, because the trainer comes on and pokes his thumb into the muscle, and I'm like, leave him alone, that's horrible. And then he wrapped up the thigh with the biggest strapping I've ever seen, you know, sort of, it was kind of duct tape followed by bandage on top. He played two
then
games with that.
There was some sort of blue cellophane that went on there.
Yeah, then he played two games with that, and then he went back to his chair and he said, take them off. So he cut them all off. Yeah. And he played with nothing. So while all this is going on, he managed to hit, I think he hit three double faults in a row. He hits nine double faults in about an hour.
He hit nine double faults in the opening set and won it.
Yeah, and won it. And I just... I couldn't really get what was going on. And I genuinely think that neither could Stan Wawrinka, because he was not very good today, Stan Wawrinka. Who's coming onto the practice court here? We've got plenty of players coming on. And I think that's Grigor
Dimitrov.
Might be
Grigor.
Hello, Grigor.
Yeah, I think that's Grigor's dad.
Yeah, okay. So they're in the distance coming on. What was your sense of it? Because, I mean, tactically, I felt like I figured it out what Medvedev was doing or how he was winning the match just after that first set had been played. But what was your sense?
I thought it was an absolute masterclass in deployment of energy and tactics only when required.
Yeah.
He's a master of match management, isn't he?
Yeah.
Which is a sort of in vogue sort of a phrase.
And also, you don't know what's going on in his mind, because it would have been just as likely from perceptions that he might have just retired as it was for him to go and win the match.
Yeah, well, towards the end of the first set, we had Mark Petrie, Jim Courier and John McEnroe in commentary. And towards the end of the first set, when Medvedev is, you know, strolling around, getting various parts of his body taped up, McEnroe goes, well, this match is a bummer.
Which rather sums things
thinking,
up.
And I'm thinking, John, it's fine. He's been this injured for the last month. He's been fine. So... Yeah, and he said in the post-match interview, he said, he sort of implied that he might have been thinking about retiring from the whole thing. He was asked, Tom Rinaldi's first question was, you know, you're into your first Grand Slam semi-final, how do you feel? And he said, I feel really strange about it, because the whole match was so strange. Daniil Medvedev is all of us. I've got to go and make telly.
Yeah, Catherine's going to go and make telly, and we'll be back in a minute. Well, that was a false alarm. I was all very excited because TV was about to be made, and I went and actually sat in the studio. I was loving it, but nothing happened.
You just got to see how the sausage isn't made.
Yeah. Basically, that's what happens when it goes to a third set, when everybody's thinking the match is over and Catherine has to make magic happen.
Yes, an unexpected Azarenka-Barty fight back.
Oh.
Suddenly, we're into a third set and more tennis podcast is being recorded.
Who are they playing?
Babos Mladenovic, the top seeds.
Quite fancy watching that. Tell you what, forget this. It's gone. What's that? So Grigor Dimitrov has just come and gone off the practice court. That didn't last long, did it? They don't practice very long, do they?
He's swapping with Federer. So as Dimitrov is hitting on practice court 5, furthest from us here, Roger Federer is hitting on Arthur Ashe Stadium.
Right.
And now they're swapping. So Roger Federer's arrival here is imminent, and Dimitrov has gone inside to hit on Ashe.
Oh, that's good.
Hot off the presses.
It's good inside info.
This is what happens when you have something in your ear and people...
Can I get one of those?
Things that make you look informed.
Those sound great. We were talking about Daniil Medvedev, and we were talking about his strategy. And, yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. The way he... I don't know whether he went in with a preordained plan to play like that.
I think he's trusted himself to figure out the plan.
That's what I
according
thought.
To the situation.
And I think that's one of the reasons that poor old Stan was so messed about by it, that he didn't understand what was happening down the other end. And what was happening is that, aside from all the double faults and I mean, it really, the idea that Medvedev won that first set is frankly absurd, really, given what was going on. I mean, if you look at all the stats, he'd served 9 double faults, way more than his opponent. He'd got fewer winners, more unforced errors, and yet he won the set.
I find it absurd that Wawrinka didn't win the fourth set after having won the third and suddenly energised the crowd and himself, how he didn't carry that momentum through over a sort of zero-legged opponent is beyond me, really. Medvedev's never won a five-set match before.
No.
So had he just been able to nick that fourth...
0-4, wasn't
it?
Yeah. But what did happen was, in the second set, it suddenly became clear that Medvedev was putting in kind of half efforts on... Once he got himself ahead, he would play quick-fire tennis and try and hit a couple of winners and break, which he did. And then, occasionally he would just play a marathon rally, one of them. Wawrinka genuinely did not know what was coming next, it seemed to me. And then on Wawrinka service games thereafter, he would either try and slap a winner, or he would just not even try. I mean, if there is an argument, if you are of the view that a tennis player should try on every point, you could say that Daniil Medvedev could have been up in court for tanking.
That's an absurd view, though, isn't it?
No, it is an absurd view, and I don't agree with it at all.
Trying to win a tennis match.
He just tried to win a tennis match in a different way by taking several breaks, and my goodness, it worked.
Yeah, he's qualified for London. Right. Guaranteed number four in the world now. Qualified for London. London are going to love him. Well, the O2 is going to love him. I'm not sure Wimbledon will love him, but... Yeah.
He's just an interesting character in so many different ways.
Although he loves Wimbledon, doesn't he? Grass is his favourite surface.
Yeah, he's a contender in all sorts of ways. I think clay will always be a nightmare for him, really, I would have thought, because of his flat game. But the impact it had on Wawrinka, I found the most interesting of all. And the impact it had on the crowd, because Wawrinka is a master at getting the crowd involved. And Medvedev stopped it. He just didn't play ball. He didn't allow Wawrinka to become inspired.
And crucially, being in the top half of the draw, he now gets 2 days off, 2 full days off, as well as that little bit extra because Federer plays in the night session tonight, although I doubt that'll come into play. So, he could be a revived, resuscitated Daniil Medvedev for the semi-finals. What a prospect that would be.
I just can't see it somehow. I don't care how long he's got
off. And also, he plays his best tennis when he's Mr. Bump, so...
Yes, he does. So well done to him. He got through. And the match was not exactly a thriller, and it was a bit underwhelming. And even the on-court interview...
This is a bummer.
Yeah. Even the on-court, people were literally tuning in for the on-court interview afterwards, and
which was disappointing.
He'd set a high bar.
But I mean, first and foremost, Tom Rinaldi, just ask him to do it. I don't know. Don't just rile him up or something. Ruffle his feathers. Pop him one. My Daniil Medvedev fix has not been satisfied today.
You can't just sort of lay it on, turn on the wrestling baddie every time you fancy being entertained.
There would have been ways of doing it.
Maybe
I'd have said, no dance today, Daniil. Do us a dance. Give us your best Conor McGregor.
Let's be honest, wrestlers do just turn it on whenever they feel like it. So maybe Medvedev needs to get with his own program. Anyway, he's through to the semi-finals of a Grand Slam tournament, so maybe we should shut up. He's joined in the semi-finals on the women's side by Elena Svitolina, who beat Johanna Konta 6-4, 6-4. What were your impressions of what you saw there?
That Svitolina was simply too good. Not too many regrets for Konta. I'm sure some people will point to the number of unforced errors she hit, but that's what Svitolina does to her game. She takes her out of her comfort zone. She makes her feel like she's got to go for too much. She, in a very, very different, more orderly way to what Daniil Medvedev did to Stan Wawrinka, scrambled Joe Konta's brain.
Yeah.
Konta's been talking all tournament about how Dmitry Zavialov, a contributing factor in her clarity of thought on the court, and all of that was gone today. It looked cloudy in her head. She was forcing it, and that's what Elena Svitolina does to a lot of people. That head-to-head 4-0, doesn't lie, does it? It's just tennis is all about matchups, and that matchup works for Svitolina.
I would have got both of those predictions today wrong. In fact, I did get them both wrong. I thought Konta would take her out today, and I thought she would do it in a controlled, aggressive manner and just break her down. And I felt it might sound harsh, because I know Konta felt she played quite well and she just got outplayed. I know that the majority of the British media felt that this was not a result to lament in the way that they did with the semi-final at the French Open and the quarter-final at Wimbledon, particularly the quarter-final at Wimbledon, and actually Konta referenced that as one she was disappointed with. I still felt a bit disappointed with this from a Konta perspective. I felt like she didn't play as well as she had throughout the rest of the tournament. Now, obviously, I understand her opponent is a part of that. My mind goes back to the match I saw them play at the start of 2018, where Konta won the first set 6-1 in Brisbane and should have won the second set and won the match. She ended up losing it on a tiebreak and then pulling out halfway through the third with an injury. I think she rolled something. But I just feel as though she did lose her timing a little bit today. She wasn't as authoritative and reliable off the ground, and it was 24 winners, 35 unforced errors. Obviously, there's a combination of her opponent in that, but I still felt like I expected more from her.
So Selena's better than she was.
Yeah.
18.
She is.
20 months ago, isn't she? I think she's actually a lot better. I think she's figured out a formula now. She's still never going to be a big hitter, but she's got that little bit extra weight of shot, so that's no longer a glaring weakness in her game. But she also just has this incredible ability to be a backboard.
Mm. Her best self is coming out at the slams now, which is, she was notable by its absence.
No titles on tour this year, but her best Grand Slam results by far, whereas previously she's been Alexander Zverev, hasn't she?
Yeah.
Those have been the comparisons.
Definitely.
Plenty of tour titles, I think 4 last year, 5 the year before. You can tell I've read Matt's notes, can't you? but absolutely, or relatively, nothing at the slams. And I'd be pretty sure she's happier with that reversed state of affairs than she was before. And it all seemed to start with the run in Singapore, didn't it? Which came completely out of nowhere. She was on a 5-match losing streak or something going into that.
And I don't like to talk about people's personal lives very much. It's none of my business, and I think it's too easy a conclusion to jump to. But it is noticeable just how there for each other she and Gail Monfils are, visibly in their support teams. They're now prepared to talk about one another. They practice together, and look at their results right now. I mean is that just coincidence? Who knows? But it's happening.
No, I agree. I mean, I instinctively hate the narrative of they're in a relationship, therefore they're happy on the off the court, therefore happy on the court, as if sort of single tennis players everywhere are definitely all miserable, crying themselves to sleep and unable to play tennis. But in this instance, that does seem to be the case. I mean, they genuinely are one another's hitting partners. They really, really are. And she's clearly benefiting from that, because she's hitting with somebody with that weight. She's talked about, I think, it's the flatness of his ball, although is it all? I mean, I don't think of him as a particularly flat hitter, but that's what she said. And his weight of shot, obviously, she said it's improved her reactions because the ball's coming at her that much quickly than it, that much more quickly than it does in her competitive matches. So yeah, it's working. I mean, if they break up, which they did briefly, that's going to be messy. So I hope they don't, because they've really embraced now being public about it. And you know, they did a video for the USTA, which was made available to all broadcasters, where they hit together, mic'd up on the grandstand court,
we're
sort of narrating the whole experience. We've got it. It's one of our rain delay in the bag VTs, which we haven't yet run because it's actually called Mic'd Up.
Interesting.
And it's but anyway, they're very much embraced being public. So if that goes wrong, It's going very, very wrong. I hope it doesn't.
Good luck to them. You also, as part of your, you do a half an hour build up every day. You had Virginia Wade in to the studio today.
Oh, she was cracking, yeah.
She was brilliant, and I was really entertained
so
by
much
the,
fun.
By the chat, and also the pictures shown of her winning the title here, serving and volleying Billie Jean King off a court in America. And she even sold herself short with the score, didn't she? She thought it was 6-4, 6-3. It turned out to be 6-4, 6-2. And I mean, it was interesting just getting her view on how serve and volley's back in fashion, and she was clearly loving all
her
that.
Eyes just lit up. Yeah, in an interview shortly after that final, she was asked about it, and she said it was a race to see who could get to the net first. I mean, how much of a throwback does that feel? Yeah, 1968, she beat the third seed in she beat the third seed in the quarterfinals, the second seed Ann Jones in the semifinals, and the top seed Billie Jean King in the final. It was the first time she'd ever taken a paycheck. It was the second professional tournament she had won, but the previous one she'd won in Bournemouth, I think. She didn't take the prize money check because she wasn't sure at that point if she was good enough to actually turn pro. So she said, well, I'll take your money. I'm going to think about it for a while. And then she goes and wins the US Open. And the other thing she said was that she had no idea what time that match was starting, because the men's semi-finals had to be played first.
Yeah.
And she said there was a chance, because they just went long, that match, that the final wasn't going to be played yeah. that day, which
well,
is
I mean,
extraordinary.
I'm old enough to remember Super Saturday from the early 90s, when they used to play at that point on the Saturday, they would play the men's semi-finals, followed by the women's final, followed by the second men's semi-final. And in 1992, the first men's semi-final was Stefan Edberg beating Michael Chang in more than 5 hours. Then it was Arantxa Sanchez against, I think, Steffi Graf in a three-setter. And then, I mean, Jim Courier, you've got him in with you on your team. He then played Pete Sampras, I guess, at about 10 o'clock at night in a semi-final, and they played four sets.
It's bonkers to think about Super Saturday being a thing.
And then the next day, Stefan Edberg, having played the longest match in US Open history, the next day came out and played Pete Sampras in the final and beat him. I mean, it was incredible. And he'd already played 2 5-set matches the previous two rounds as well.
I always remember 03, Roddick against Nalbandian, the Super Saturday semi-final.
Yeah.
And then him coming out, and he did it. He came back and beat Juan Carlos Ferrero in the final the next day. But that feels so alien now, to
and
think
actually,
that happened until quite recently.
I think previous to that, I think in the 80s, I think there was a Super Saturday that actually changed the rules, because there was one period where they played a Legends match that went the distance, followed by two men's semis that both went the distance, followed by the women's final.
So
the
women's
anything.
Final finalists are sat there in the locker room waiting for a Legends doubles match to finish.
Plus 2 5-set men's matches. I believe that was in the mid-80s. I think that's the order that
it
happened.
That's ideal, though.
That changed things a little, but it wasn't until only a handful of years ago that Super Saturday was shelved altogether. Extraordinary, really. So, Catherine, the night session is still to come. You're going to go and do some more telly.
I think I might actually have to make telly this
time. Yeah, so Catherine's going to go and make telly. I'm going to go and make radio, and then we'll be back later to make more podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites.
So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, Roger Federer is out of the US Open, beaten by Grigor Dimitrov in five sets. And excuse me if I'm a bit shocked, because I did not see that coming, for all the normal reasons that we always talk about. The fact that Federer has always owned Dimitrov, his record was 7-0 against him. Grigor's gone through a terrible time of late, really, on the court. He's lost so many matches. He's had a shoulder injury. He's had no confidence whatsoever. No real seeming identity to his game anymore. He was really struggling with his serve for a long time. But, you know, there's two factors here. One is Roger Federer was injured tonight. That much is clear. He started to really show signs of it visibly, I thought, about 3.5 sets in, maybe a bit earlier. But he was telling us afterwards that it's something that he came into the match with. And now, it's always a tricky one, that, isn't it? Because both he and Novak Djokovic a couple of nights together, they're at pains to not blame things, or certainly to take away credit from their opponents. But at the same time, he got pushed tonight in the press conference, and he admitted that, you know, it was something that he'd come into the match feeling. And it did take me back to early on in the match, where Catherine and I were messaging one another, and she said that she thought Federer looked nervous when he came out onto the court, which I must admit I didn't pick up on. But now when I think about it in hindsight, you know, maybe he was, and maybe he was uncertain of this physical situation, and it might have affected the way he was planning to play the match. I mean, in the first set, not a bit of it. He was 3-love up within minutes, and he was doing what he always does against Grigor, which is just rushing him and messing him around and asking him questions that nobody asks him. And Dimitrov looked a bit panicked, which he's often looked against Federer. He's only ever won two sets against him in seven matches. Hasn't won any of those at all. And I did think Federer would still find a way to win, even when Dimitrov was coming back at him. And I thought, Catherine and I had spoken beforehand, that we both thought Grigor, given the way he's playing this week, and he's had some decent wins beating Alex de Minaur, you know, you need to be on your game to beat that guy, because he doesn't give it to you. We thought he might win a set and push Federer and certainly play okay, but when he went 4-1 down, it seemed very unlikely in many ways. But what was clear was that he was really up for it. He was on it. His feet were alive, Dimitrov's, tonight. And therefore, Federer had to beat him, because I don't think there's anybody who moves better than Dimitrov around a hard court, particularly. His speed off the market, his flexibility, his ability to manipulate a tennis ball. He really is hard to get the ball past, but Federer's become a pass master at doing it against him, his particular style. But yeah, into the fourth set, certainly you started to see that there was something wrong with Federer. And he was missing a lot all the way through the match, and that would have been a concern for Federer fans. He was missing that forehand, and when he starts to do that, like he did against Kevin Anderson at Wimbledon last year, and against John Millman here a year ago, you start to wonder really whether he's going to be able to put enough together in order to win. And there were moments when he went flat out, just went for broke, and it wasn't happening for him on a consistent level. At the end of the fourth set, he went off the court and he had some treatment. I think he sort of chiropractic treatment, because he was talking about needing a crack of his back. But when he came out, he lost the next four games. So it wasn't happening for him. I suppose he could have chosen to retire, because it was looking really unlikely that he would win at that point, but he's never retired in his career. That's always been his view, is to try not to retire. But it was a pretty forlorn looking Federer as he left the court, and even more so when he came into the press conference afterwards, because he knows this was an opportunity, not only because he felt he was playing well, but because Novak Djokovic wasn't there. And that doesn't happen too often. And it really opens the door now for Rafael Nadal to get that 19th Grand Slam title close to one, within one of Federer, for the first time in, well, ever? I'm not sure. I can't remember them being that close before. And then you've got this fascinating lineup now, with Daniil Medvedev against Dimitrov. What an opportunity. And we feel we've got a soft spot for Grigor. He was a player coming through when we started this podcast, and we always thought he would, frankly, do a lot better than he has. And he's a really, really lovely guy. I can't stress that enough, really. Dealing with him behind the scenes, I've always found him to be charming, but it's not just charm. He's a thoughtful guy. I've seen him. He treats everybody nicely. You know, it doesn't matter. It's not just people who might be a certain level of importance, whether they're CEOs and all that sort of stuff. He treats everybody nicely. And I really, really just pleased to see him happy, because he was also devastated when Peter McNamara, the Australian coach we've talked about, passed away. He was coached by him for quite a while in his early career and treated him like a father figure. So he's had a rough ride of late, Grigor. And this is huge. This is huge. It's a Grand Slam semi-final for the third time. And arguably, well, it certainly is his best chance of getting through to a final, because the others were against Nadal in Australia and Djokovic at Wimbledon. And here he is playing Daniil Medvedev now, who's a really, really good player, but is surely on fumes for a place in the Grand Slam final. I mean, it's incredible, really. So well done, Dimitrov. I suspect Federer will take this one hard for a couple of days. And he'll really wonder what might have been. And sorry, folks, those of you, including us, who were very keen on a Nadal-Federer final. Oh, I was anyway. I don't think Catherine's so bothered. She'll quite happy have the whatever it throws up, I think. And look, I'm really delighted that it's Dimitrov, because I think it's a cool story in its own right. But yeah, Federer and Nadal ain't happening this year, and it may well never happen. This was as good a chance as you could imagine. So that's that for the evening session. Serena Williams was absolutely dominant. 44 minutes it took her to beat Wang Chang, and she didn't even play that badly. It's just that Serena was awesome tonight. And she now will face Aryna Svitolina in the semi-finals. So that's the lineup. Tomorrow we've got Berrettini against Monfils. We have Schwartzman against Nadal in the evening session. Still loads and loads of good tennis to look forward to. And we really look forward to bringing it all to you. Just a couple of final thoughts. We were talking earlier on about Super Saturday, weren't we? And I decided to look it up a little bit. That 1984 match, it was mid-80s. I knew it was mid-80s, but it's 84. Which is still regarded as one of the great tennis days. I slightly got the order of the matches wrong, but this is the gist of what happened. Stan Smith and John Newcomb played a sort of bonus match between former champions. Then they got the first men's semi-final out, and that was Ivan Lendl against Pat Cash. Five sets, two of them tiebreakers. Then after that, it was the women's singles final between Martina Navratilova and Chris Evert. And then after that, it was John McEnroe against Jimmy Connors. And that went five sets and ended at 11:16 p.m., 12 hours after Super Saturday began. Martina said afterwards, or more recently, "Now it seems inconceivable that we didn't have a starting time for our final. For me, that was the most difficult thing. I think Super Saturday was great for TV and the fans, but horrible for all the players." And, well, you can see what she means. Difficult for all of them, whether it's the semi-final starting at 11 or the one that's finishing at 11 and the women's final kind of not having its start time, which is such a big deal. The other thing I wanted to mention is when we were on the show yesterday, we were in the car. You may remember we went over that spectacular bridge on 59th Street. Now, to us, silly Brits, 59th Street doesn't mean an awful lot. It's just a number of one of the roads. We didn't know it was a really cool bridge with loads of history and a great story of its own. We have been inundated by messages from our listeners, including Joel Taylor, and also our absolute hero, Mary Carrillo, who says, "Do not underestimate that bridge, please. It's been a childhood favourite of this woman's life. How I got from Queens to Manhattan throughout the years." And she also tells us and sends us a link to a music video from Simon and Garfunkel in 1966, the 59th Street Bridge Song. So I urge you to go and look it up, because it's well worth it, and it's a really cool story. We didn't know we were on it, but we were, and we will give it its due respect in the future. So that's us, really. The Tennis Podcast for another day. We will be back tomorrow with another edition of it, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, executive produced by TennisBalls.com with our mascot Rio with a Y. Do tell anybody you can about the show. If there's anybody you think might like to listen to it, let them know. Leave us an iTunes review, if you wouldn't mind. That's always appreciated. We'll leave the link in our show notes, as we will for our newsletter. If you want to get on there and get our daily newsletter each morning, it's free. You get Matt's stats, you get our daily predictions. Most of them are wrong. Doesn't matter. Just keep listening, if you wouldn't mind. Hope you keep enjoying it. And we will be back with another one of them for you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.